handsome enough in any way as a man or a woman for me to want to suck his dick.
So who does it have to be? There's got to be a special someone.
Like a man that's so good looking that you want to suck his dick?
Mm-hmm. Matthew McConaughey.
Jared Leto.
That's who it is for you?
I had a really hard time.
Really hard time.
Mm-hmm. Dallas Buyers Club. When he got all
done. Oh, yeah.
His rayon. Yeah. I was like, Jared Leto's a good looking woman. He's definitely fuckable as a woman.
10 out of 10. It's because
he's so pretty.
They probably did that on purpose.
I know.
To confuse all the straight men in America.
Let's screw it all. Let's make them all bicurious. Let's do up Jared Leto so pretty.
Oh my, I love that.
He is a good looking guy.
Yeah.
I mean, even like, you go back to like Fight Club and you see how handsome he was back then. Oh, yeah. He was like 20 years old. He's a really good looking guy.
You
know?
You guys said that in secret.
I know, because we know. It's a universal truth.
Matthew McConaughey, really? You'd suck his dick?
And or Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa.
Could get it.
Right?
Jason Momoa could fuck anybody he wanted to. Jason Momoa is so good looking, he could fuck Matthew McConaughey if he wanted to.
You're right. Oh,
I'm ready for that.
I'm sure you are.
I would pay UFC money for that.
Me and Dylan earlier were talking about pay-per-view hotel porn.
Yeah.
What's up? How
it's just like a new level of low.
Pay-per-view hotel porn.
Like when you're in a hotel and you have to pay for the pornography.
Exactly.
On the TV?
Like what kind of people are doing this?
That's like dynasty. That's like a relic of the past. You don't have to pay for porn anymore.
No, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's all on your phone for free.
Exactly. That's why it's like, why do they even offer pay-per-view?
You can get yourself a dummy Gmail account and sign up for an account and save all your favorite videos.
Don't give anybody any ideas.
Theoretically.
Hypothetically? Is this recording? Okay.
I'm just kidding. I don't actually do that. But anyway, why would you pay for porn? It's free. It's everywhere.
Yeah, that's what was confusing me. Like, there's still a market for it, but where? Hotels, apparently.
I think it's rich, old white men who want to seem fancy. And they're like, ooh, I only pay top dollar for my pornography.
Like, it's a fancy day. Get room service.
Years ago, I had a friend. God damn you.
I'm sorry.
I had a friend who would buy pay-per-view porn on her television. Because she had a friend who worked for the cable company, he would just cancel the charges for her.
Nice.
Of course, this was back when cell phones looked like bricks, so you can imagine. This was a long time ago.
Back before they invented free pornography.
That's true. There is a direct correlation between the free pornography and the size of the screen of phones.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were getting smaller and smaller, and then at one point they just started to get bigger and bigger as our erections grew.
Oh, goodness.
So, who wants to introduce everybody back into the podcast?
Hi, I'm Dylan.
God, welcome to Too Scared to Sleep.
This is episode 11, part 2. I say part 2 because we recorded part 1, but somebody, Annabelle, didn't want to read the instructions on our soundboard. So, it sounded like shit.
And I still won't.
And she still won't. It sounded like we were all underwater. So, here we are, re-recording. My allergies and sinuses are all fucked up, so I sound weird, but I'm suffering through it for you, our dedicated fans.
Do you remember a year ago when I had that horrible sinus infection, and it looked like I had a brain tumor every time I blew my nose?
Yes.
I had all that purple blood coming out?
That was real bad.
Anyway, did we already talk about... I don't even remember what we talked about. Have we already spoken in one of our podcasts all about our new equipment and gear?
No, because that was episode 11.
That was episode 11. We want to thank Easy Pawn New Braunfels for buying so much of my bullshit stuff in my garage so that we were able to scrounge up enough money to buy a new soundboard and microphones and microphone stands so that we can keep our podcast going.
Yeah, and now that we have more spaces, we can include another microphone. We already have a microphone for our producer, Annabelle.
Hey, what's up?
Now she's got her own thing going, but we can plug in another microphone and do interviews if we need to, and hopefully we can do that soon.
Yeah, as soon as I get some spare time and go and donate plasma.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Because it's been like 6 months since I'll have to get the physical and then I'll have to wait. It's really like a 4-hour ordeal before I even get to sit down and give plasma. But that's what we gotta do. I'm gonna have to do it.
Yep.
If I give 3 units of plasma, over like 2 weeks, then we'll have enough money for another microphone and on the microphone stand.
There you go.
Thanks. Both of y'all just look at me like, oh, no big deal.
Yeah.
It's fine. Just bleed for
us. It's fine. No big deal.
Just bleed for us.
We don't have any extra money.
I told you I would do it if I could.
Around Christmas time.
Same, same.
Nobody wants me in Annabelle because we're broken.
Mm.
You pick the two teenagers that just can't.
I know.
Every other college kid is like bleeding for funds. I know. Year.
Because the plasma center that I go to is in San Marcos, and it is full of Texas State kids.
Heck yeah.
They're all giving plasma all the time.
You got to get that beer money somehow.
Beer money.
Exactly. Pay for beer and blood.
And blood. Let's see. What movies did we watch? That's all we ever talk about.
I know.
Wreck-It Ralph 2 was fun.
I haven't seen it. I don't know if I will, but I'm glad it was good.
Yeah, I went to go see it with my family. So there were like, everywhere you looked, there were pockets of families. There was always like, there was at least one child in each family unit that was under 5 years old that did not want to sit down and watch the movie and was just like running up and down the aisles.
But yeah.
That's how these movies go.
That makes sense. I watched 8 Mile last night for the first time.
For the first time?
The first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you even a white kid that you haven't seen that movie?
Apparently not.
That's like y'all's roots.
Oh my god. I mean...
The streets.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Came up from the streets with Mekhi Phifer.
You know, that's just how it be sometimes.
Is Jamie Kennedy in that movie?
I don't know.
I assume he's in that movie.
I don't know. I know Exhibit is in that movie.
Exhibit's in the movie?
Yeah, he is. He's in there for like a brief little thing, but I was like, hey, I'm not too white to know who that is.
Oh my god, you're almost too white.
I'm almost too white, you're right.
Anyway, what other movies? What have you been doing, Annabelle, other than going to school?
Ooh, you want to hear something crazy that happened at the school?
I want to hear it.
Yes.
Okay, active so you shooter. Guys know every year they have the Sights and Sounds of Christmas.
Yes.
It's like all the lights, so pretty, families come out. There was a stabbing. Someone
what?
Got,
no shit.
Someone got stabbed at Sights and Sounds, and it was, they sent out an alert, like an email. Like, they sent out an email saying, like, hey, Sights and Sounds, someone just got stabbed. Be on the lookout for two men, one with a neck tattoo or something. Like, very vague. Like, the most vague description.
Jesus Christ.
Two Hispanic men, one with a shaved head. And a beard.
Yeah.
Like, that's everybody in San Marcos,
everybody
Texas.
Looks around suspicious. No, but then they didn't send anything after that. Like, we didn't hear any updates. We didn't know. But well, I think they put it on the news, and I think they went to critical care, but they're okay.
We're all like okay. The basic white girls screaming and yelling and crying and leaving.
I have no idea. I wasn't there.
Because for me, that'd be like the time to go to Sights and Sounds. I'd be like,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, like everyone's
there's
leaving.
There's no more crowd now. There aren't any lines.
All the funnel cakes are available.
Yes.
Yes. Also, there's a chance to get stabbed.
Holy shit.
That was crazy, though. But apparently it was, like, from a previous fight, and just someone got stabbed. I can't remember if it was a guy or girl that was a stabbing victim. But I remember it was two guys that did the stabbing.
Nice.
I've already talked about how there used to be some meth heads living across the street from our house.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? I told you?
Your alarm.
I think, yeah.
Every night they would come. Every night I went to go
oh,
throw
yeah,
the
yeah,
newspaper.
They, were, like, super nice.
They would walk out there, and then just about, I'm like, hey, what's going on? Anyway, so right before they got evicted, one of the guys was dating some woman, and the ex-boyfriend kept driving around the house. So he drove down the house and peeled out. And this guy pulled out a revolver and shot down the street randomly at the car.
Oh, shit.
And ended up getting arrested. And then they got evicted.
For obvious reasons.
I know. They were the best. They were the best neighbors to have.
Yeah, I feel like they wouldn't want to mess with anybody.
They were always on the lookout. I always knew somebody was had eyes on my house.
Jesus.
But anyway, but yeah, they got themselves evicted for that.
Well, that sucks.
Multiple people have been evicted from the duplex across the street from me.
The cursed duplex?
Apparently so. One time, they had to get all their shit out, and they left it on the sidewalk for like 2 whole days. Just trash and couches and clothes and shit.
Well, yeah, if you're not prepared for it, I mean, where is it going to go?
Exactly.
I would have stolen some of it.
And none of it was worth stealing.
I don't think any of it would be, but also the part of me that just wants to have things wants to take it.
The klepto?
Yes.
Interesting.
You were very quick to agree.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny because you're wearing Annabelle's socks right now.
These are not Annabelle's socks.
I'm just kidding.
I was like, is he wearing my socks?
I think he is.
It's fine.
I have nothing else. What else do we need to talk about?
I know we have a lot of B-roll from the sex talk, and then yeah, I got you.
Did you? Good. Got you. That's fine. I don't mind that everybody knows that I would suck Jared Leto's dick. You are proud. If he was dressed up as Rayon from Dallas Buyers Club.
Does he have to be? Would you accept him if he wasn't?
Maybe if he was dressed up as the Joker from Suicide Squad.
TBH, I'd smash.
See?
Yeah.
I'm comfortable in my sexuality to know that I would do that.
I got you.
I'm sure that there's a woman that you'd go lesbian for.
Delilah and J-Lo.
Never.
J-Lo dressed as Selena Quintanilla?
No.
The actual Selena, minus the decomposition. I can't think of just
a hot woman. There's many hot women in Hollywood.
You're right.
So name one. Are you like an Emma Stone person?
No.
I was thinking Emma Stone, actually. No. And Anna Kendrick. I love Anna Kendrick.
No, she's an... I don't want to like upset anyone, but she annoying.
You think a lot of people are annoying?
I think I'm just easily annoyed by celebrities. Because part of me is like, it's not a person. If it's not someone I'm going to have like physical contact with ever, it's not really a person to me.
Anna Kendrick strikes me as the person who wouldn't shut up during sex.
I'm fine with that. I'm
sure you are.
I just love Anna Kendrick. Not okay with that. Emma Watson.
Hermione?
Yeah.
Hermione. No, that's Hermione. You pedophile. She's studying her wizardry. Leave her alone.
Oh my god.
She's all grown up now.
Exactly.
She cute.
Mm-hmm.
But she's doing a lot of good things. Isn't she in like the UN and stuff?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she's doing amazing.
Yeah, she's a badass woman. Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot?
Gal Gadot. I also love Gal Gadot.
She's good, I guess.
You guess?
You guess.
Have you seen her in that Wonder Woman outfit?
Yes, I've seen her in the Wonder Woman outfit. It's pretty impressive. Except when you know that it's a body double. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
No, it's not.
She's in Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah, she's a voice in that. I don't know who she is, though.
She is the voice. I don't know.
How about them sports?
Fuck you, them Cowboys.
You're wearing a Cowboys shirt.
I am wearing a Dallas Cowboys shirt right now. So they beat the fucking Philadelphia Eagles this week, and it was awesome.
I'm from Houston. It's all about the Texans there.
Fuck those Texans. Fuck them in the neck.
I'm sorry. Every other part of Texas is Cowboys, except for Houston.
It's because y'all are
weird. We just had to have our own team.
Y'all are brain damaged.
That makes sense.
All right.
The team sucks.
Okay. You don't have to come after me about it.
I'm sorry. I'm very upset about that. Anyway. I know, right?
Just hit the mic away. I'm done.
Fuck this podcast. Fuck you guys. Jesus Christ.
Let's talk about your screenplay.
Why are we talking about my screenplay?
I don't know, because it's something to talk about.
Okay. Well, it's actually coming along. I'm writing out the general outline for, again, I can hear my voice being fucked up again. I'm sorry for my voice, and I'm sorry if I have to leave some of the clearing my throat in. I'm going to try and edit out what I can.
It's okay.
No, it's coming along. I've got most of the basic story done, and, you know, I've gotten a little more details, and I've got a bunch of notes on a bunch of scenes. I'm just trying to figure out a good ending, and you were helping me with an ending, but I was writing it out, and it just wasn't... It didn't feel right. It didn't click with the rest of it. Okay. So I need to rewrite it, maybe brainstorm. But, you know, it's coming along. I'm really excited if I ever actually get it done. Even if I don't end up turning it into anything, which I certainly hope I do, I'm just going to be happy if I can get it done. Because I've been working on this for a long time.
I've already written out her acceptance speech.
Jesus Christ.
For best original screenplay.
Okay. Yes. Well, thanks.
When we get up there, I'm going to, like, just take over the microphone and I'll let you speak.
That's fine.
I'm just kidding.
That's okay.
Like, take full credit for it.
Wow. That's not okay.
When we first started writing this. I'm just kidding.
When he first started writing this.
It's so exciting, though.
No, yeah, I hope so.
Because I really do love film, and I like, you know, the idea of filmmaking.
Yeah. Me too.
Just watch the thing about filmmaking that was really cool. It was all about Stanley Kubrick, of course.
Nice. I love Stanley Kubrick.
One of the greatest directors ever.
I've been watching a lot of videos on how to, like, or, you know, on behind-the-scenes things for movies and short films and, you know, like, DIY equipment and shit. And, like, I'd like to start making short films and stuff, too, just to get, like, experience and kind of have some, you know, I feel like writing a short film would be good as like a break from writing a whole full length movie, because mm-hmm. it's just compiled into like under 10 minutes and you could do a short thing if you have some general ideas and then kind of flesh it out a little bit. But I would like to make some short films to get some experience. And then ideally I'd like to be able to make big budget movies. Yeah.
That would be really cool. That's how James Wan got into it. James Wan and anyone else.
I love James Wan.
You know, they wanted to write big budget movies, but they realized that if they were ever going to make a movie, they needed to make a movie that they could just film basically in one stage area. And so they wrote Saw that, because basically it was just going to be, you know, the two main characters stuck in that room trying to get out.
And the original Saw is a masterpiece.
It is.
I love that movie.
I remember seeing that movie and just being like flipped out when Jigsaw gets up off the ground.
I know. That was haunting. I love that.
He had been controlling the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. He just gets up and like walks out and game over and slams the door. Oof. I love that movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. I like all of the Saw movies, but I love the original Saw.
I can't remember which ones I've seen, but whatever.
I have all of them on my Vudu.
Oh, you do? You mean our Vudu?
My Vudu. Whatever. Yes. I will say Saw 7, the final chapter, which was not actually the final chapter.
Like when Jason died?
Yeah, like when Jason
died. And like when Freddy died?
And like when Freddy died. And like when Michael Myers died.
Did Michael Myers? Oh,
he just did. He died a bunch of times.
Did he?
Yeah, throughout the series. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah. Saw 7. Not great. But, you know, I still watched it.
I was watching Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Nice.
The Francis Ford Coppola one, thinking to myself, God, this movie is dated.
Yeah.
It's horrible. So he's a really good director. And at the same time, it's a horrible movie in so many ways.
But it's also a classic.
I mean, it is a classic. But it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would have Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves in a movie together like that.
I love Keanu Reeves.
You'd go gay for Keanu Reeves. You know you would.
Yeah, honestly, I would.
The way you just, your eyes rolled back into your head when you said,
I love Keanu Reeves.
I knew it.
I love Keanu.
It would be fun if they could make a third Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
They were working on it.
Yeah, but
I don't know if anything's going to come from that.
It's never going to happen. Poor Alex Winter stuck delivering pizzas in North Hollywood because he can't find time. Because Keanu Reeves isn't never going to sign up for a movie like that.
Yeah.
No.
But you know what? I would much rather have the John Wick 3 than Bill and Ted 3.
I guess so.
Excited for John Wick 3 to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we spent a lot of time bullshitting. Maybe we should tell a story.
We probably should.
Probably should. Because isn't that what people come here to listen to? Besides just my sexy, gravelly voice from allergies.
Some people listen to our podcast to get shout-outs.
That's true.
So I'm going to give a shout-out to Angie B, my buddy in Austin.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness.
Angie B A, because she's badass.
Nice.
Angie, I'm giving you a shout-out because you asked for one.
Hell yeah.
But that's cool. And also Christopher R. in Fort Collins, Colorado. Christopher R. I'm also giving you a shout out.
Nice. Is he listening?
Yeah, I hope so. Because I told him we had a podcast. He's like, I'm definitely going to listen. So at some point he's going to get caught up to episode 11 and be like, hey, they just gave me a shout out.
Yeah. So shout out to you, man. Thanks for listening. Please tell all of your friends.
Yeah, get other people to listen to.
Please.
It'd be cool.
I know we're not paying you to sponsor us, but please do this for us.
You might be the only guy that I know that listens to us other than your dad.
I have some male friends that listen to us.
Oh, that's right. Your buddy, what's his name?
Cade.
That's it.
Cade.
Cade 6?
What?
Nothing.
Anyway. Ignoring your random shit.
It was from Destiny.
Okay, well, I haven't played Destiny.
I got back into Destiny this week.
I play Destiny and I love it.
You play Destiny?
Heck yeah.
On what, the Xbox?
Yeah, I played on the Xbox. I have an Xbox One at home. I should bring it here, but my sister's like,
Xbox friends.
Yeah.
I play Destiny.
I do. I love Destiny. I have the Master Chief Collection. I love it.
Annabelle.
Annabelle, why do you have the Taco Bell app on your phone?
The which one? Don't look at my...
Taco Bell?
Yeah.
Taco Bell, Texas Lottery. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
This is a window into your soul right now.
Literally. To the
You're at 3% battery.
Yeah, I know.
Charge your phone.
I was going to check our Anchor views real quick.
Wait. Let me explain something here. I said that I like Destiny, and you said you like Destiny, and then you said you had the Master Chief Collection. That's Halo.
Oh, what is the Master Collection called? Is it just called the Master Collection?
For what?
For Destiny. They add, like, a combo.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's just, I said Master Chief. I meant Master's Collection. My bad. My B.
I hope so. Wait, are you trying to get Anchor views? I could look that up right now.
No, I already got it. So we got, Shrike, you'll cut this out later so people don't need to know, but so most of our, like a few of our episodes are up to like 50 plays.
Oh shit, what up?
Like episode 9 is at 50, episode 1 and 2 are at 56 and 53.
We have 404 plays, all total plays.
Does it tell us how many like followers we have or anything?
207 plays in 11 to...
Mm-hmm.
47, 50, 44.
I want to check our Instagram, see how many people follow us on Instagram.
I wish we were famous.
Me too.
How do you become famous on podcasts?
Like, I don't know.
I don't either, but I want to.
Do we need to do a follow giveaway, like I said?
What's a follow giveaway?
Oh, like a follower. For people that follow,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, followers giveaway.
I'm telling you, dude, I can make a decorative Ouija board. I would actually love to do that.
Then do it.
I will.
It's fine. Just don't open it up.
That's why I'm not going to make a planchette.
Okay.
Oof. We have 187 followers on our Instagram.
Lit.
So why don't all of our videos have 187 listens? Come on, followers.
I don't know.
Okay, don't attack them.
Okay, I apologize. That was aggressive and hostile.
You want them to support you, not...
I would love for you to support us, and I apologize.
The best strategy that I can give is that we're going to have to do a giveaway, and then we're going to have to do those, one of those things where it's like this Instagram post, repost it. Why are you making that face? You hate those, don't you? I just won stickers on an Instagram
You just
thing
won
like
something.
That. So therefore, ergo, it works.
I think I'm just salty that I haven't won the lottery yet.
I think maybe that's what it is. You're just
maybe
upset.
You need more lottery apps on your phone.
Yeah, maybe that's what you need.
I need more lottery apps.
Perhaps.
I use it to scan my little scratchers whenever I get a scratcher.
You need to stop wasting your money on scanning scratchers.
I haven't bought a scratcher in a while.
What you should do is put that money in a jar.
You're one of those people.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
And bury it in the yard and wait for it to grow into $100 bills.
It's not going
to
grow.
No, you take a $1 bill and you put it on the charger until it's at 100.
Exactly.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I wish that would work. I'd be at home charging money right now.
Dude, me too.
You dose.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, back to the story. Story, story.
Yeah,
story.
Sorry. Back to the stories. And now I sound like a 70-year-old
smoker. Drink some of your drink and clear your throat.
I'm trying.
Fix it.
Now, like I said, we are re-recording episode 11.
Because it sounded like shit.
Because it sounded like shit. Shout out to our producer, Annabelle. But anyway, the one I'm talking about, when I talked about it the first time, it was like real in the news. It was right there. You know, it was happening, like breaking a couple days before I started talking about it.
Oh, that's going to be so good now. Yes, keep going.
It is a little bit later now, but I... was /am talking about Samuel Little. Samuel Little is potentially one of the most prolific serial killers in modern day. He is 78 years old currently. So before I get into exactly what happened, just, you know, starting with a little bit of background, he was born in 1940, and throughout his life he was convicted of various crimes, including shoplifting, breaking and entering, drug solicitation, and fraud. For a good chunk of his life, he was residing in a California prison where he was sentenced to 3 consecutive life terms for the murders of 3 women in 1987 and 1989. The women were found beaten to death and strangled, One of them was left in an alley, one was left in a dumpster, and the third was left in a garage.
Jesus Christ, this guy.
Yeah. So he was arrested in 2012 at a homeless shelter in Kentucky and was extradited to California because that's where they figured out where the murders took place. Since 2012, he had been just chilling in prison. But recently, some things had come up that caused them to want to talk to Samuel Little again. And, you know, he's serving 3 consecutive life sentences. He doesn't care, like he knows he's not getting out. He's now been confessing in great detail to the killings of more than 90 women all across the United States between the years 1970 and 2005.
Talk about a super predator.
Yeah. So of the over 90 that he's been talking about, when I first did my research, 36 of those had been officially confirmed. It looked like most, if not all, the rest of them were also going to be confirmed, but these were the only ones that were official at the time. And I'm going to tell you, of the 36, where they were and how many were in each state. So there were 2 in California, 1 in Nevada, 1 in Arizona, 1 in New Mexico, 2 in Texas, 5 in Louisiana, 5 in Tennessee, 1 in Mississippi, 1 in Illinois, 3 in Georgia, 8 in Florida, 1 in South Carolina, 3 in Ohio, and 1 in Washington.
How did this guy get around so much? Because you know that some serial killers are like truck drivers, or they're like, you know, they move around a lot, and so they're able to move.
He just kept on going. Like, I don't think he was a truck driver.
Just traveling man?
He's just a traveling man.
Good God.
Just out there doing his thing, living life.
That's really disturbing how easily he was able to kill people and just keep moving on.
I know. And it's like, it's mostly in the southern states, but it also does get a little higher north. And, you know, it literally ranges from coast to coast.
That's insane. Disturbing. Very disturbing.
Yeah, incredibly. All right, so while he's been talking with the police, he told them that he mostly targeted vulnerable women like prostitutes and drug addicts. And that's part of why it was so easy for him to get away with this shit, is because it was prostitutes and drug addicts, it led to very few investigations of the bodies right away. Like, the police officers just kept having more important people to take care of, basically. Sorry, my mic is falling. Okay, here we go. Alright, so his MO was to strangle and beat them to death and then just leave them kind of out in the open. 2 of the... What?
Nothing.
Apparently Annabelle thinks this is funny.
I'm like waiting for Jake to say something so I can hear it again. Say something?
Something.
Okay, sounds good.
Alright. 2 of the official murders of his... fuck me up. There were 2 big murders of his that kind of helped get this back on track, tie him to other murders rather than just the 3 in California. One of them was a woman in Maryland that was found in 1972. He said that she was recently divorced and possibly from Massachusetts. There was also a 45-year-old woman named Sarah who was found in Kendall, Florida, who he claimed to have killed, and they've since found that both of those were true. But he is able to describe the people that he killed and how he killed them in great detail, which is why he was able to recall, like, oh yeah, she was recently divorced, she was from Massachusetts, you know, like, their ages, their names.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. The only thing he's a little fuzzy on is, like, the exact date that he killed them. But he claims to remember everyone that he's done. And he gave the detail for all 90 of the murders that he did. Like, so any information he could remember, which is apparently a lot of information. But that's why police are actually taking this so seriously and trying to, like, get on this, because everything here seems credible. Like, this dude actually fucking killed these people. And, you know, it may be more now. I'll have to research it a little bit, but like I said, at the time 36 of them actually got corroborated. The information started when a Texas Ranger who was investigating a cold case of a woman named Denise Brothers, Little's name popped up in the VICAP system, and once he saw the murders that he had been convicted of in California, the MO there versus the MO of the murder of Denise Brothers, he started kind of putting pieces together. Because she was found strangled and left for dead in a field in Odessa, Texas in 1994. So the ranger decided to start visiting Little in prison, and Little was proving to be, like, super cooperative. And, you know, they spent some time building up a relationship and a trust.
Right.
A, you know, conversation. And Little just started giving him all this information on other people that he'd killed. And he said he had confessed to more than 90 of the murders. And because it spread across the United States, the FBI started getting involved too. Once they officially connected Little to Denise Brothers' murder, they moved him into Texas, and now he's residing in Ector County, Texas, awaiting trial for her case. But, you know, like I said, he's 78 years old, so his health is starting to decline, and, you know, so the FBI is getting involved. So the FBI is basically making daily visits to him, or they were when this was happening. They probably still are. They're making daily visits to him to try and get as much information on the killings that he's claiming to be a part of as they possibly can before he dies. They're just in there trying to get all the details they can and trying to corroborate as many as they can as fast as they can to finally give some of these families closure, you know? Because the dude's killed almost 100 people since, like, the 70s, and he really has gotten away with it. Like, the only reason anybody even knows who he is or what's going on is because he's being cooperative. Like, there are maybe four he would have not gotten away with. The three from California and then the one cold case in Texas. But, like, that's still close to 90 murders that he would have just gotten away with had he decided to keep his mouth shut.
It's unbelievable.
It's horrifying.
That he's just out, that he was out there.
Yeah, he was just out traveling around killing people.
Man about town.
Yeah.
It's insane.
So that was Samuel Little.
He makes other serial killers look like sissies.
I know, like, you know, style-wise, you know, he's not got the most exciting repertoire. He just strangles and beats him to death. Exactly, but he's more quantity over quality. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, so he's got the numbers for sure. He's horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys like Gacy and Bundy, who killed 30-plus people, those are the real serial killers.
Yeah.
Guys who only killed, like, 5 or 6. Oh, come on.
Yeah. Step your game up, serial killers.
Exactly.
A PSA from Too Scared to Sleep.
Yes. It's disgusting.
Say something. Something.
God damn it.
Anna. I don't have anything to say.
Oh my god.
I'm not a serial killer. I'm not going to take this advice to heart.
Okay, well, you know,
they talked to
comes up.
They talked to Dennis Rader one time, and they asked him, you know, Dennis Rader was the BTK killer.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Kansas City.
Thanks.
He was in Kansas City murdering people. He actually worked for ABT. The security company.
The irony.
And the irony of it.
Yeah, ADT is supposed to protect you from people like him.
Exactly. Exactly.
I had a job interview with ADT.
You did, and I thought about that. I was like, hey, Dennis Rader used to work for ADT.
Jesus.
But they asked him, what kind of advice do you give? And he's like, if you're a single woman, you should do all of these things. He gave an interview, and he was talking about how, you know, don't try not to be so predictive in your daily routine. Don't always drive home the same way, you know. Trust your instincts. If you feel like something's going on in your house or your dog is going crazy, you know, maybe you should just leave.
It's probably me.
It's probably someone else. Yeah, it's probably him.
That's fucking horrifying, but also like kind of cool of him to be like, "Hey, here's how I caught these people. Don't fuck up like that."
Exactly.
You know, if I can't kill you, nobody can.
Oh my god! But he was on another level as well. The shit that he used to do is disgusting. There's a I Survived BTK documentary out there.
Oh, shit.
Highly recommend it. It sounds so disturbing when I recommend all these.
I know.
horrible things that I've watched.
10 out of 10.
Oh, well, 10 out of 10. That's what we're here for.
Would watch again.
Would recommend to all my friends.
Would recommend.
Would be remembered to.
Actively recommend to all my friends, no matter how long I've known you. Anyway, so before Thanksgiving for the holiday, I went to Fort Collins, Colorado with my family.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I remember that that was your topic now.
I know. Thanks a lot for remembering. But the reason that I bring it up is because we had to drive all the way up there. It was a fucking long drive. And while I was driving, I listened to some very, very good podcasts that I would highly recommend. The first one was called Dirty John. And Dirty John is just the most amazing story that you'll ever have to listen to. I don't think we could do it justice because it's already out there. And it's like, why would you listen to us talk about something, summarize? Even if we summarized it and did it like over 3 episodes, I think the podcast that I listened to was like 9 episodes or 6 episodes, something like that. It's really good.
It's like, why would you watch the Last Airbender movie when you could just watch the show?
That Last Airbender movie was shit.
Yeah. Absolute garbage.
And I didn't even watch the show, but I knew it was shit.
I love the show. That makes me hate it even more. Anyway, continue.
Anyway, the next one I watched was called Dr. Death. And that one was insane. I'm not going to spoil these for anybody, but if you have a chance, listen to them. And then the third one that I listened to was called Happy Face. And it was about a serial killer. And it was actually about his daughter.
Oh, shit.
Grew up with him and some of the crazy shit that he did and some of the experiences that she had.
That's fucking
growing up with him and kind of knowing that something was off about him. But he ended up being a serial killer. It's insane. Gross. Super gross. But anyway, I went to Fort Collins, Colorado, which is way in Colorado. I mean, it's North Colorado. It's an hour north of Denver. But it's also an hour away from Estes Park. And Estes Park, of course, is where the Stanley Hotel is. Stanley Hotel is very famous for being haunted. It's also very famous because Stephen King stayed there, and he was inspired by his stay there to write The Shining, which is a great great book.
And also, a great movie, even if it's a terrible adaptation.
Right. But in and of itself, it's a good Stanley Kubrick movie.
Oh, yeah.
But, so, my topic today is going to be the Stanley Hotel because I was very impressed with everything that I learned about it. And I was very impressed with the tour that I got to take. Because you can go there, and for only, what was it, $24? Did I say $25?
Under $30.
It was under $30. I was able to take a one-hour Stanley Ghost tour. And they talked about the history of the hotel and some of the reasons why they think that there's so much paranormal activity. The story of the Stanley Hotel and the story of Estes Park, Colorado, really has to do with the man who founded the hotel or built it. His name was Freeman Oscar Stanley, and he was born in 1849. He had an identical twin brother named Francis Edgar. So it was F.O. Stanley and F.E. Stanley, and they grew up in Maine. Stephen King is also from Maine. Something that was crazy about them was that they were always very industrious kids. And always, I guess, they always had this entrepreneurial spirit. When they were 6 years old, their grandfather gave them switchblades as a birthday gift. Instead of stabbing each other, they spent the entire summer whittling and making wooden toys that they sold to the local children.
That's so much more productive than I would have been with a switchblade.
Oh, for sure. I would have cut myself within 24 hours, and then my parents would have taken the switchblade away from me.
You're right.
Exactly. When they were 10 years old, the two brothers started their first actual business together, refining and selling maple sugar so that they could end up buying, they bought material for suits, basically, for school. When they were 11 years old, their uncle, whose name was Liberty, taught them how to make violins. And by the age of 12, Freeland Oscar Stanley had completed the building 3 violins, and he would continue to make these violins throughout his entire life, including some of the concert quality pieces that are still collected and still prized by musicians. So just an amazing kind of guy, very industrious. And
they're pretty young making some high quality shit.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, what can I make? Optimus Prime as a Lego character, but I would need instructions.
Yeah.
They're definitely more industrious than we are. Okay. So, eventually the Stanley brothers went to college. F.O. Stanley wanted to be a teacher, and so he continued to go through college. His brother decided that college wasn't for him, and so he became a photographer. But R. Stanley became a teacher and eventually a headmaster of a high school in Maine. And that's where he met a woman named Flora, and they ended up getting married. The love of his life. They were together, they were inseparable for the rest of their lives. They were married in 1876. But tragedy strikes in 1881 when Stanley contracts tuberculosis. And the same year, his younger brother had died of tuberculosis.
I love consumption.
Consumption is the worst. So F.O. Stanley just decides, you know what? Fuck this tuberculosis. I'm going to beat it. So he does everything that he can not to succumb to the disease and fights it. Which there wasn't really a lot to do. I mean, once you have tuberculosis, you have it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he tried to stay healthy and he tried to stay active and that sort of thing. The brother had become a photographer after he left school. So the both of them decided that they were going to go into business together, and they perfected a dry plate photographic process, which basically cut down the amount of time that you had to expose the negative film in order to make a photograph at the time. And it cut it down exponentially to like a matter of seconds. So they made a shit ton of money off of this
new technology.
They ended up, they started the Stanley Dry Plate Company, made a fortune, and ended up selling it to Eastman Kodak.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Kodak.
The next thing that they decided was that they ended up starting an automobile company. And the reason that they did it is because Francis Edgar Stanley, F.E. Stanley, had bought a bicycle factory that was next door to where their dry plate process factory was. And he tried to get his wife to ride a bicycle with him, and she fell off, and she's like, I'm never going to get back on. And he says, well, I'll make you a carriage that you can ride in that won't fall over. And so they started to build automobiles. And at the time, they weren't sure whether they wanted to use internal combustion or they wanted to use steam, and they decided they were going to make steam-powered cars, which is where Stanley Steamers come from.
Lit.
Right. So, they start the Stanley Motor Carriage Company, and they were just selling them all over the place. They made a huge fortune selling these steam cars. They did some publicity where they drove it all over Maine, these steam cars. But in
so these guys are just making bank and doing whatever they want.
Everything they do turns to gold, which is great for them.
Hell yeah.
I don't know whether they were, I mean, they seem like really nice guys, so I don't see a reason why they couldn't make a fortune. I don't feel bad about liking them. But and in 1903, when F.O. Stanley was 54 years old, he had the worst bout of tuberculosis that he'd ever had in his lifetime. Started coughing up gobs and gobs of blood. He was losing a lot of weight. And it was really, really bad. So he decides that he and Flora are going to go to Denver for the summer to get away from the wet and humid Maine summers. They're going to go somewhere dry, somewhere with higher elevation, cleaner air. And so they go to Denver, Colorado, and he makes an appointment with a famous doctor there. And the doctor looks at him and says, well, you're in really bad shape. So why don't you go to this cabin that I have in Estes Park and just spend the summer there and try to recuperate. But then he pulls Flora off to the side and says, look, I don't think your husband's going to make it. Go ahead and take him there, and in the winter time, when the summer's over, in the fall, when the summer is over, I'll come up with a coffin, and I'll help you bury him. Ooh, that's how bad off
it was. Okay.
So, they go to Estes Park, and they stay there for their first summer in a cabin, and over the course of that warm season, Stanley just kicks tuberculosis in the teeth, and becomes insanely healthy, and the weather just helps him, and the climate helps him out. He gains back 40 pounds. He starts going on 5-mile hikes in what would be Rocky Mountain National Park at the time.
Jesus.
And he just decides, you know what, every year from now on we're going to come to Estes Park, and we're going to come here for the summers because it's beautiful and I feel good, and I'm doing so much better. So the doctor shows up at the end of the summer with his coffin in a wagon. He's like, fuck that. I don't need the coffin. You know, I'm doing a lot better.
Yeah, he's making tuberculosis his bitch.
That's right. Making tuberculosis look like a little bitch. But he decides that he is going to spend the next 2 years building a home in Estes Park. The home still stands there. It is a landmark. And by 1907, he had all but recovered. He goes back to Maine, and they start to make plans on how to build a hotel. So in order to power the new hotel, they decide that they want to have electricity throughout the entire building. So he helps Estes Park build a hydroelectric plant, and that brings electricity to the entire city.
Oh, shit.
They build this beautiful, they build this park that looks like a New England. It has New England architecture to it. It's got 48 guest rooms. Each one has a bathroom, a fully electric kitchen, steam laundry, hydraulic elevator, electric lights and telephones.
Jesus.
Exactly. Beautiful. I was there. Right off the side of the main structure, he built a concert hall with a Steinway grand piano for his wife, because his wife is a music teacher. She always wanted to play at the Boston Symphony Hall. So he built this concert hall that is a one-third recreation of the Boston Symphony Hall. During the day, guests at the Stanley played golf because he built his own 9-hole golf course. They had an indoor bowling alley, horseback riding, and they had motor excursions. Everybody who visited the Stanley Hotel at the time had their own dedicated steam car that they could use and drive around wherever they wanted to.
Nice.
At night, they had formal dinners, they had concerts, they had a billiard room, they had a cigar room. Even though Stanley never drank and he never smoked cigars because he had tuberculosis, but he still had all of those creature comforts for his guests.
Yeah.
And people like J.P. Morgan stayed there. The Rockefellers stayed there.
Didn't a president stay there?
Presidents have stayed there. Plenty of presidents stayed there. Let's just say every president.
Every president?
Not every president.
Not every president.
But a lot of them. Harry Houdini performed there in the concert hall.
Nice.
John Philip Sousa performed in that concert hall. When I went on the Stanley tour, they showed us the stage, and there's a trap door that they have marked off. And they're like, they built that trap door for Harry Houdini's disappearing act.
That's cool.
So it's still there. It was amazing. To transport visitors to and from the hotel, Stanley created a 12-seat mountain wagon steam car, which is just amazing. And in 1910, they built the Stanley Manor just below the main hotel to house any bachelors, because at the time, it was improper for an unmarried man to stay under the same roof as a married woman.
Mm-hmm.
Or an unmarried woman. The fourth floor of the Stanley Hotel was basically just a big room, and all of the nannies and the children stayed up there, and they just played all through the time. Of course, they didn't have air conditioning, but it's beautiful weather. Even in the summer, it's not that hot. So what they would do is, they also have this really beautiful staircase, and so they would open up the windows on the fourth floor, and the wind would come all the way down through the staircase. It provided ventilation. And nice. they have high windows that open up above the doors and above the main windows,
mm-hmm.
so you can have all that ventilation going through. The Stanley Hotel really put Estes Park on the map. By 1915, President Woodrow Wilson signed an order to designate the Rocky Mountain National Park, and in 1917, Estes Park becomes an incorporated city. The story of F.O. Stanley ends in 1940. In 1939, he was in Estes Park for the summer, and Flora Stanley was there with him, his wife, and she suffered a stroke and died.
Oh, shit.
So sad. The next year, when she died, Stanley decided that he was never going to go back to Estes Park. He didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
But they invited him back the next year to try to honor him, and he went back for a celebration. And then when he returned to his home in Newton, Maine in 1940, he suffers a heart attack and dies at the age of 91.
Well, shit.
So that's where he was. So between 1940 and in the 70s, for about 30 years there, they suffered some highs and lows in the hotel. They were close to being bankrupt. They got sold a couple of times. It kind of went into disrepair. But 1974, in October of 1974, Stephen King and his wife, Tabitha, stayed there, and they spent one night there. And the story goes they were living in Colorado at the time, and they drove through Estes Park, and they decided that they wanted to spend the night at the Stanley. So they go in, and they were about to close up for the season. And everybody was gone. They were going to be the only people staying overnight. And so they tell the story that the front office lady had to look through a box and find the credit card imprinter in order to charge them for their room. They ended up staying in room 217.
Which is important.
Which is very important, and I'll explain why. They ate in the main dining hall. All the tables and chairs were up. They were the only people there. And they walked down the hallways, and they were there alone overnight. And Stephen King woke up in the middle of the night having a nightmare that his three-year-old son was running through the abandoned hotel, and that a fire hose from the wall was chasing after him. And he got up, and he was just covered in sweat, and he lit a cigarette, and by the time he finished smoking the cigarette, he had basically the bones and the nuts and the bolts of the story of The Shining written in his head. So he goes on to write The Shining, and it becomes a hugely popular novel. And because of that, the Stanley Hotel becomes even more famous and has the renown that it has now.
Yeah.
Which is just amazing, I think. So why is it haunted? And this is the part where I get to my personal story of the Stanley Hotel. Like I said, I was able to take the haunted tour, which was really cool. You go into the Stanley Hotel, and they have a lower level, and they have a lot of memorabilia from The Shining in that room, in that area. They also have photos of famous people who have been there. They have photos that they've taken on the haunted tour, going on a slideshow, and you can see that some people have seen orbs, they've seen shadow people, they've seen apparitions.
Nice.
All of that stuff. But they sit you in this room, and they tell you a little bit about the history of the Stanley Hotel as you're going through the haunted tour. And the one of the theories that they get out is that the Stanley is built on a huge deposit of quartz, and we know that quartz conducts electricity, and it's used in electronics pretty heavily nowadays. And they think that maybe the reason that the Stanley Hotel has so much paranormal experience is because that quartz is just like replaying memories, sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's taking the energies that are surrounding the hotel and just kind of putting it back out.
Exactly. Now, the thing about the house, the thing about the Stanley Hotel is that none of the spirits or apparitions that they see in the Stanley Hotel seem to have any malevolence about them. You don't have anybody getting dragged up any stairs. You don't have anybody yelling, "Get out!" Nobody gets scratched. None of that stuff happens at the Stanley Hotel.
Only good vibes.
Only good vibes.
Good vibes only.
Right. So the first thing that they do is they bring you into the concert hall, and they tell you that sometimes people have taken photos of the balcony, which kind of looks like a choir loft in a church, but that was where F.O. Stanley and his family and his wife stayed, and they were able to watch the concert. So it's like a private viewing area for the VIPs. Mm-hmm. And they've actually seen apparitions there. But they have one ghost who haunts the concert hall named Paul, and he was a former caretaker, and he enforces the 11 p.m. curfew. And our tour guide had only been there for about 6 months working for the Stanley, and he had already seen Paul one time. He said that he and some of the other tour guides were in the concert hall late one night past 11 o'clock, and that he thought he heard somebody say, "Get out," from the side, from like stage right, and he looked over his shoulder and didn't see anybody, but then when he looked to the front doors of the concert hall across the way from him, he saw that there was a shadow person standing by the door.
Oh, wow.
Right. So if you go downstairs in the concert hall, you go into an area that is a green room now for whenever they have performers there. Mm-hmm. But at the time, that was where the bowling alley was, the indoor bowling alley. But they have a green room down there, and there's a particular room there where there's a spirit named Lucy who stays in that room. And Lucy apparently was probably someone who had either stayed there, or maybe she was homeless and she hid out there overnight. And she likes 70s music, and so sometimes she'll react if you play 70s music like ABBA or the Beatles in the green room where she is. Tour guide said that somebody went in there and played some Kanye West one time, and then when they came out, their iPod had lost like 300 songs off of it. They had just been deleted.
Jesus.
Something else that happens a lot in the tour is he encouraged us to take as many photos as we possibly could, but a lot of people see some electromagnetic phenomenon happen where like their batteries will drain or photos will just be deleted off of their phones or off of their cameras. So, let's see. One of the construction workers one time said that he felt Paul nudge him while he was sanding the floors. And lights flicker off and on whenever you're in the concert hall. So that's something that happens a lot. The attic, like I said, and a lot of the fourth floor rooms have a lot of heavy paranormal activity. When you're up there, you'll hear children running down the hallways. You hear laughter a lot. And if you go onto the Stanley Hotel website and you sign up for a paranormal room, like if you book a room and you want it to be one of the haunted rooms, they put you on the fourth floor.
Yeah.
Because that's where you have a lot of that. There's a room 428 where guests hear furniture moving and footsteps, but it's physically impossible for anybody to be doing that. Like, they hear it on the roof, they hear it on the ceiling, but there is no ceiling. It's just the outside roof from where you are.
Oh, weird.
So there's no way that you could have that happen to them. Also, they have an underground cave system that they used to have there where people could move, the hotel workers could move between one building to the next and up and down floors through the underground cave system. But when they started to build further down from where the hotel is in Estes Park, they used some dynamite to level a piece of ground, and the cave system ended up falling in on itself. They had a cave in. So they can't use it anymore. But people say that there is a baker whose spirit inhabits the underground cave system, and he likes to show up in women's selfies.
Nice.
The scariest part is that in order to clock in and out as a worker in the Stanley Hotel, you have to walk through this through that underground cave system to go into their break room. So you walk literally underneath the hotel through this cavern in order to get to, or this cavernous hallway in order to get to the time clock.
That's horrifying.
It is horrifying.
Did you get to see that?
I did. Room? Yeah, we got to stand in. And he says, you know, you might be encouraged to maybe want to take a rock or some dust or some dirt from this area, but we would recommend that you don't, because people who do end up having lucid nightmares.
God, I really wish I could have taken the rock.
And they end up sending the rocks back afterwards to try to get rid of the nightmares.
I'd take a rock.
No, I would not.
I for sure would.
Okay, so let's see. Let's talk about room 217.
Yes, let's.
Room 217, of course, is very famous because of The Shining. And room 217 for the Stanley Hotel became haunted because at one point there was a female worker named Elizabeth Wilson. And in 1911, she was walking through the hotel and she went into that room to check, to check to see whether everything was ready for another person to come in. And she had a candle, and one of the gas line was open, and the room had been filling for two whole days with explosive gas. I was going to say gasoline, but it was like, you know, like a gas for like heating things. Mm-hmm. And so the room exploded. Now she was not killed. She survives, and she continues to live, and work in Estes Park. She worked for the Stanley Hotel until she died, but her spirit inhabits room 217. And she moves luggage around. Sometimes she'll unpack your clothing. She'll turn off and on the lights sometimes. But Mrs. Wilson is from a time when, like I said, it was improper for a man and a woman who were not married to be living in or to be staying under the same room. So if you stay in room 217 and you're not married, sometimes she will nudge her way in between you.
Goodness when you're gracious. Asleep,
or she'll pack up all your luggage and leave it in the hallway.
Jesus.
Exactly.
It's I don't just like crazy. That.
I've got some more stories about the Stanley Hotel. after we moved from the concert hall, they moved us into an area that used to be the billiards room. And it was where Stanley and the men would hang out. They would play billiards, they would smoke cigars and that sort of thing. There is an American flag that is above the mantelpiece. And what had happened was there was a soldier who had been in Operation Enduring Freedom in Iraq. And he flew this American flag on top of his Humvee while he was driving. And they hit a roadside bomb. And all of the men that he was with were killed except for himself. But he suffered some burns to his lungs. And so he had trouble breathing. And he stayed at the Stanley Hotel and heard the story about how F.O. Stanley had survived tuberculosis by staying there. So he decided that he would give the American flag as a gift to the Stanley Hotel.
Nice.
And they put it in a special frame and under special glass to try to keep it from fading from the UV light. And they have it up above the mantelpiece pretty high so that it doesn't get hit by direct sunlight as much. But there is a face that is starting to appear in the red and white stripes of this American flag.
I have seen the picture and it is horrifying.
Yes, and I took pictures of it myself. And you can actually see a face. And people who have taken the tour year after year say that the face is getting more prominent and easier to see as time goes by. As opposed to fading, the face is coming back. And I swear to God, it looks just like F.O. Stanley.
That's really creepy.
It really does. In this billiards room, people see apparitions in the mirrors. Sometimes they'll see shadow people moving around. But I think the best story, and this is my last story of the Stanley Hotel, is that there was a man who was getting married there. And he was in this billiards room. And he had just put on his tuxedo and he was standing there. And he was starting to have kind of second thoughts and having cold feet about getting married. And an older gentleman dressed in a suit, in a dark suit, came into the room and asked him what he was doing. And when he told him he was getting married, he gave him some words of encouragement that helped him to muster up the courage to go through getting married. And so the next day, after he has his honeymoon, he goes downstairs to check out. He's with his new bride, and he says to the lady at the front desk, "I would like to say thank you to the owner because of what he did for me yesterday." And the lady's like, "Well, the owner hasn't been here for 2 weeks." And he says, "Well, the guy that I talked to said that he owned the hotel. And, you know, he was just really complimentary to me. He was very encouraging. And he really helped me out. I'd like to say, I don't know who it was that I talked to. I mean, he said he owned the hotel." And then he looks over at the painting on the wall and he says, "Oh, it was that guy." And he points to a painting of F.O. Stanley. Jesus. Who he had seen the day before.
I love it.
In the billiards room.
I love that.
It was so crazy. But I loved it. I loved every minute of being in Estes Park, Colorado. And the Stanley Hotel is just an amazing place.
I can imagine.
Yeah. It's so cool. But there's like a years long waiting list to go and visit and stay in room 217.
Yeah, I can imagine so. That's ridiculous.
Here's our listener. Here's the bonus listener fact. Room 217 used to be the presidential suite, and they rebuilt it, and they made it smaller after the explosion. So actually, room 213 and 215 to the side of 217 used to be a part of 217. So you could book one of those rooms if you can, and you'll have the same paranormal experiences as you do in 217.
That's fucking cool.
Which is really cool.
That's much better than waiting years.
Oh, yeah, 3 years and then paying $1,000 a night.
Oof. Probably cheaper, yeah.
Oh, it's definitely cheaper. But, yeah, it was 217, and then in Stephen King's novel...
It was 237.
He changed it in the novel, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, when Kubrick made the movie, they used room 237 as well.
Yeah. There's a documentary about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining called Room 237, which was really good.
Yes.
I saw that a couple years ago.
It's all about the theories as to why he made the movie.
I know. It's really cool.
I just read something about how, okay, if you don't know anything about Stanley Kubrick, that there is a prevailing theory that he made The Shining, and The Shining is his way of secretly confessing that he helped the United States fake the moon landing, the Apollo 11 moon landing.
I remember hearing something about that, but I don't remember at all why.
There's a lot of stuff. For instance, there's a scene where Danny is playing in a hallway, and the carpet that he's sitting
the
on.
The iconic carpet?
Yes, that iconic diamond-shaped carpet looks a lot like the landing pads at the Kennedy Space Center.
Okay.
And also, he's wearing an Apollo 11 sweatshirt when he's sitting there.
Okay.
There's other stuff where Jack is talking to his wife, Wendy, and she's trying to convince him that they should leave, and he's like, "Don't you understand? I'm committed to staying here. Don't you understand? I signed a contract for this."
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like little tie-ins and little but I was reading somewhere that if they did fake the moon landing, they would have had to make like over 200,000 people basically keep that secret all those years, because that's how many people were involved in the space program.
Yeah.
At the time.
If you get all those people and, you know, if you were to fake it, then you'd have to have everybody involved in any of the costumes, the props, the set, the camera work, anybody that was there helping, any assistance, anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the NASA personnel.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear something crazy?
Yes.
So you know how, okay, we have hieroglyphics and things like that that are like hundreds and thousands of years old. Tell me why we lost the footage of the moon landing. It's gone.
Or like when you see the feet of the spacesuits, they're flat boots with no tread, and then when you see photos, the boots have like
zigzag pattern
tread, yeah. Stuff like that. Or like how their cameras were mounted through their bodies, and there was no way for them to focus. And yet, all the photos that they took are in focus.
It is kind of weird. How do you lose the moon? Like, that blows my mind. Like, that wasn't that long ago. Who was in charge of it? And why did they only have just, like, one copy? And they're like, it's gone. We lost it. Where NASA, we lost the footage. Deleted. Yeah. It's not a YouTube video. It's right. A major
historical... This isn't PewDiePie.
Yeah. Like, this is a major historic event that's just like, it's gone. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah. But that idea that we faked the moon landing just to bankrupt the Soviet Union.
Why the heck not, though? I mean, I could see the reasons.
I think it would be easier and cheaper just to send a person to the moon instead.
But you know, the U.S. is extra and does stupid shit, like make a pen that can write in zero gravity instead of just bringing a pencil.
Oh yeah, the Russians brought a pencil.
Yeah,
That was their solution to the space.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just to give the guys pencils.
USA has the epitome of big dick energy, but using it the wrong way.
But pencils are dangerous in space. Like sharpening them and then writing with them if there's any type of like residue that gets into the air. That's what I've read.
Oh, plus, well. They can start fires, I guess.
Yeah.
That's from the Martian.
Then bring a marker.
But then the ink would just leak out of it. It wouldn't stay in the marker.
That's a lot of work.
Just write in blood.
Write in blood.
Type.
Oh my god, just
bring a
typewriter. Type it up. We have tablets. Bring your tablet to space.
Yeah.
You don't gotta write it down.
I always wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid. But you had to have 20/20 vision.
Yeah, I can't do that.
There's a lot of things you have to have. You have to be just a perfect human.
Plus, you have to have a PhD.
Like, we can't all be Ryan Gosling.
And you can't have explosive diarrhea in space.
Oh my god.
That's probably just...
Actually, you could, because all you do is you put that vacuum thing up to your anus and you just...
Ugh, like the Chuck Palahniuk short story.
Yes.
Ugh.
I feel like nobody would want to live with me in that... close of proximity.
Does anyone want to live with you now?
No.
I mean, you probably just get used to smelling farts and drinking your own urine.
Why are... Okay.
Filtered.
Well, thank you, Bear Grylls.
They're still
no,
gross.
They filter it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, what's his name who just came back? Kelly. That astronaut who was in space for over a year.
That space guy.
Spaceman. What was his name?
He did so
Spaceman
good.
Spaceman Swift.
He spent over a year there. Of course, he had to drink his recycled urine.
You can't take that much water, yeah.
No, you can't. You can't have that much water.
You get a Brita filter and put it on your dick.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Probably you mean one of those life straws. Which
innovation.
I
did modern problems
life
require modern
freak
solutions.
Me out, because I still feel like I'm going to swallow a rock.
Right, okay, so the story is that my 7-year-old watches too much YouTube for one thing.
Yeah.
He used to watch the VAT19 website. VAT19 is one of those things where it's like, it's one of those places where you get gag gifts, like a 5-pound gummy worm.
Oh, okay.
Or a nine skull, all that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they did a Life Straw one where they were like, they drank their own urine, they drank their own vomit, they drank from a urinal. It was disgusting.
That's the worst
thing. I feel like she's pushing it too far. You don't need to be that gross.
I know you don't need
just
to be
just do it
that
in
gross.
A river. Just drink out of a river. Or just drink tap water. Tap water grosses me out.
It's gross enough. I know. So, I mean, just drink some water from Flint, Michigan if you really want to be grossed
Jesus.
Out.
Jesus. But you're not trying to die, Jake.
Exactly. Exactly. But we went on a Cub Scout trip, me and my son, camp out, and they were talking about water filtration, and the guy had a Life Straw, and my son lost his mind because he saw a Life Straw in real life.
Yeah.
And they grabbed some pond water, and they were like, yeah, you can drink the pond water with the Life Straw. Does anyone want to try? And my kid's hand shot up. I'm like, what the fuck? Don't put your hand down. But he did, and then he was like, Dad, you should try it. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't even like, no.
Because you still have to look at the dirty water. Like, what if it's just a gimmick and you're drinking just dirty water?
Yeah, how do we know this Life Straw is new?
Like, it's not filtering. It's just putting in flavoring that makes it seem like there's no flavor. So you really just have just shit
anti-flavor?
Anti-flavor?
I took video of us using the Life Straw. And, of course, my wife, his mom, got all freaked out about it because she's a hypochondriac. She's a lazy hypochondriac.
Not going to do anything about her hypochondriac.
Exactly. Anyway, Dylan, do you have anything else?
No, not for this one. I think I'm good.
How about you, Annabelle?
We good.
We Gucci.
Listen, we thank you for listening, and if you don't already like us all over social media, please do. We have a Facebook, we have an Instagram, we even have a Twitter.
Yeah, our producer Annabelle is running our Twitter, so if you have problems with that, that's all her fault. Don't take it out on us.
Yes. Within the next 2 weeks, we are going to do a shameless giveaway along Instagram, whether Annabelle wants us to or not.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a giveaway.
So keep an eye out for that. Also, please tell all of your friends about us and please have them listen to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll do some sort of Instagram giveaway. I'm thinking it's going to be really cool. I hope everybody else digs it as much as I think I'm going to.
Annabelle, what are we going to do?
I'm not the type of person to enter them, so I can't be the type of person to...
You don't run the Instagram, you're fine.
I just entered an Instagram giveaway and I ended up winning. If I'd had your bullshit attitude,
you got a fuckload of stickers.
And you know what? I want a sticker pack. I'm not going to give you any of those stickers.
Can I get a sticker?
Of course I can give you a sticker.
I don't need stickers. Do you want to pay my college tuition, though? That's what I really need.
Will they accept stickers as payment?
I can't help you there.
These stickers aren't going to pay the bills, Jake.
Oh my god.
Stickers don't keep the lights on.
Xbox.
No, they don't.
PlayStation 4.
What?
I said you when Renee buys the PlayStation 4.
Oh,
they gonna pay the bills.
They ain't gonna pay the bills. Never pay the bills.
No. Okay, guys. We thank you for listening. We hope you have a good night, and we hope we let you too scared to sleep.
Jake sounds too quiet.
God damn it, Jake.
Yeah. I'm doing my best. Am I supposed to talk louder?
Your resting volume's quieter.
Oh my god.
You want me to do? You want me not to produce? I'll leave.
Don't do that!
Jake, if you kill this podcast, I'm going to kill you.
I'm not going to kill the podcast. Excuse me.
If you make Annabelle kill this podcast.
Wow. That hurts. How about now? Do I sound better?
Okay, cool.
Which one of these is my voice?
It's the entire recording's voice. It's like the volume level.
Bop!
Skitty bop bop bop.
Tingo scrap.
Yeah, but I didn't even know this could do this.
Yeah, this is cool.
Look at that. What does it look like when I say fuck?
That.
Just that right there.
You know, I don't even have to look at the screen to know exactly what it sounds like when you and I say I know the shape.
It's right there.
It's like a little circle.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like a little circle, and sometimes it looks like a little Africa.